Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, more on the Atlanta Braves. We'll hear how it sounded and talk about their 2-0 start. Plus, I'll give you my takeaways from week 6 of the NFL season as we'll run through all of those games coming up a little bit later on this hour. Continue to react and break down to the weekend of football. Ed Ogeron out of a job with LSU, not much of a surprise there. And Cincinnati up to the number 2 spot in the country. And still, people aren't believing or buying into them. We got a lot to do here over the next couple of hours. Hey, hope you did okay this past weekend in the weekly Pick'em contest. I had a 500 week on the picks I gave you on the show Friday. We went 4-4-1. So exactly 500 over the weekend. Still over 500 on the year. New week, though. Don't forget to get your picks in by the end of this week, by 5 p.m. Friday, and you could be the winner of a FanZone gift card. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to participate in our weekly Pick'em contest, which rolls along all football season long. charlestonsportsradio.com. We'll get back to the Braves in just a moment, but you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Billy from Bamberg is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I just wanted to talk about the Gamecocks a little bit, and I got to be honest with you. I've been a Gamecock fan for as long as I can remember, but, Bo, I'm about done with them. I mean, I don't understand how, other than for a few years with Spurrier, we ain't done nothing, Bo. Ain't done nothing. And, you know, we're the flagship university for the whole state. We've got our campus right in the heart of the state capital. We're in the best conference for football and a lot of other sports, too, in the Southeastern Conference. And we can't do it. We just can't do it. I mean, I don't understand how Vanderbilt is better than us. And you might say, well, they lost the game. I'm talking about on the whole, in terms of the whole package. You know, basically, we're Vanderbilt without the academics. That's what South Carolina is these days. I mean, it's pathetic. And, you know, we're paying Shane Beamer however many millions of dollars. And, you know, he's learning on the job. He ain't never been a head coach before in the Southeastern Conference. I mean, that's crazy for the flagship university. And just my last comment is, I can't get over the Tennessee game, Bo. Tennessee's in the same boat as us. New coach, sorry program, and they beat the tar out of us. So I don't know where we go from here, to be honest with you. But, I mean, he ain't going to get fired because he's his first-year coach. But I'm going to tell you, it won't matter if he did because we'd end up screwing it up either way. We're going to keep him too long or not keep him long enough. It don't matter.
Well, I appreciate it, Billy. Hey, I imagine Gamecock fans are very frustrated today, continue to be very frustrated, and rightfully so. You're always welcome to climb onto our Davenport of love, like this is the office. We're the therapist, and you could talk it out. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Yeah, I mean, it's what I said about the Tennessee game going in and then coming out. There's a reason why I circled that game. I highlighted. I said that's the game of the year. Not Clemson, because I thought, you know, Clemson was going to have a great year, and that would not be a competitive game. Now, who knows what happens. But not Clemson, you know, not Texas A&M, not Florida, not any of these other games, Georgia even. Tennessee would be the real benchmark and the measuring stick. Halfway through the season, they have a first-year head coach. You have a first-year head coach. Both teams have been struggling the last couple of years. Let's see who gets off to the quicker first step. And it is certainly Tennessee, even this past Saturday. I mean, Tennessee, I know they were at home, but, you know, they hung in there. Ole Miss had a chance to win the game. And the Gamecocks, they did beat Vanderbilt, but beat them by only one. When you look at South Carolina this year, what's the game you feel best about? Throw Eastern Illinois out the window. You beat them 46-0, but that may be the answer. They did what they were supposed to. They dominated. They looked good. Good times. First game of the year, you're feeling good. Everybody's happy. You're 1-0. Because otherwise, you beat East Carolina by 3. You beat Troy by only 9. And granted, you should have had that touchdown when you dropped the ball at the goal line. But still, you can't take that away. That was a mistake you made. So you beat Troy by only 9. You get blown out by Georgia, but hey, at least you scored a touchdown. You get blown out by Tennessee. You beat Vanderbilt by only 1. Maybe the game you feel best about is Kentucky because you hung in there. Kentucky was the number 11 team in the country, undefeated heading into this past Saturday, and you lost by only 6. I mean, that may be the game that you hang your hat on, because otherwise, what else? What are you going to sell me on when you look back at this year? Like, what will be the highlight? When they put together the highlight tapes for the banquets at the end of the year, you know, what's the highlight this year? Beating Troy by 9? Beating East Carolina on a last-second field goal? Hanging in there with Kentucky? I think that's probably the most impressive performance so far at this rate. Losing by only 6 to Kentucky. Because Saturday, beating Vanderbilt by only 1, that's tough to swallow. That's a bad win. There are bad losses. There are good losses. There are good wins, of course. Most of them are, but there are also some bad wins. That was a bad win to only win by one. You're favored by 18. I know Vegas doesn't always get it right, but you can't come down to the final minute with Vanderbilt. And it is first year of Shane Beamer. He's not getting fired. He's not going anywhere. You need to give a coach 3 years before you can make a determination. But this has been a tough first year in terms of the performances. Now, when it comes to the record, like I said, I picked them to win 5 games this year. I don't know if they get that 5th win at this point. But if they do, they're right on schedule for me. But it's also just how they've looked along the way. I said those toss-up games, right? Kentucky, Tennessee, Missouri, and I even threw Auburn in there. Can you win 1 or 2 of those? Maybe they beat Missouri. Missouri's a lot worse than I thought they were going to be. But to get blown out by Tennessee, to beat Vanderbilt by only 1, those are some tough results to swallow. And by the way, when you look at the recruiting rankings, 24/7 Sports always puts this together. Vanderbilt has the 59th most talented team in college football. South Carolina's 22. So based off of the talent on the roster, South Carolina is number 22 in the country. Vanderbilt's 59. That should not be a one-point game at home. There's a reason why they were favored by 18. And if Zeb Nolan didn't come in and save the day, I don't think they win that game either. So that's the other part. If Luke Doty doesn't get banged up, or if they decide to just roll, you know, if he was healthy and they roll with him, or maybe they pulled him more based off performance, he could have kept playing. I don't know. But if he stays out there, I don't think they win that game. I don't think he gets them down the field. If Zeb Nolan didn't come in and save the day in the final 90 seconds, then you're losing to Vanderbilt at home. And the way you lose, not scoring since the first quarter, a couple of turnovers, you let Vanderbilt, you know, score there late in the game to push their lead even further. At least you got out of there with a win. That's most important. But you probably don't feel too good getting that win or winning that way. Appreciate the call, though, from Billy in Bamberg. So I've been here over 3 years. I'm still not familiar with a lot of the places. Joe educates me on the South Carolina geography. Where is Bamberg?
That would be in kind of the southwestern part of the state.
I looked it up here, and I see it's next to, is there a Denmark, South Carolina?
Yes, not far from there.
And
Earhart.
And Sweden, South Carolina is right there, too?
Yes, it is.
I wonder where we got these names from. You got a Bamberg next to Denmark and Sweden.
And some Scandinavian settlers.
Oh, there's a Norway here. I see a Norway.
Right, there is, yes.
All next to each other.
Just missing Finland.
Yeah.
Or Iceland. And Iceland.
How about that? It's what I've always complained about, though. The names of towns and streets, not creative enough. We just, you know, people, the settlers would come over and they would, let's just name it the same thing of where we came from. Or we have this town over here, let's name it that. We need more names, more creative names.
Or ask the nearby Indians what they call it.
Yeah, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Bamberg, all right next to each other. I just figured this out. I've been here over 3 years. So there you go, learning about my South Carolina geography.
And I was about to, mention to Billy out there, Shane Beamer didn't inherit the best situation at South Carolina.
No.
Because not only did, Muschamp kind of leave in a mess, but also a lot of the players went with him. They departed the program after, along with Muschamp.
Right. I mean, this is a rebuild. And the old theory that we bring up on the show, they always say it's like a roller coaster. However many years down it's going to take to get back up. I would say South Carolina's been 3 years down. It's going to take them 3 years to build it back up. But I think what's most frustrating is what Billy touched on was the Tennessee thing. Because Josh Heupel, I don't think, took over a great job at Tennessee either. I don't think they were in a great spot. There's an investigation. They won only three games last year. All right, and he comes in, and he gets a couple of guys to transfer, and he took advantage of the transfer portal. And when you look at that talent ranking again, Tennessee's 19th, South Carolina's 22. So even talent on the roster, not a huge gap. And yet Tennessee beats South Carolina by almost 30, and they're playing these other games where they blow out Missouri, and they're hanging in there with an Ole Miss. I don't think South Carolina would. So you see that, and I get the frustration there from a Gamecock fan. You know, that's why I said going into this game against Vanderbilt on Friday, I was talking, you know, what do you expect? 4 or 5 wins this year was reasonable. That is a good year. That's what they're going to end up with. But I do get the sense that, or I do understand the consternation when you look at Tennessee, you know, elsewhere in the division, and look at where they are already. And it's like a keeping up with the Joneses. And you're thinking, like, man, why can't we be in that spot where we have a dynamic offense and we're scoring a bunch of points and we win some games easily instead of grinding it out every week against a Troy and an East Carolina and even a Vanderbilt? So that's where my frustration would be. I picked them to win 5 games this year. I'm not surprised how the record's gone. I am surprised that there's already this big of a gap between Tennessee and South Carolina. You're falling behind another team in that division. Kentucky's passed you. Tennessee maybe already has in 6 games. Missouri is struggling this year. I thought Missouri would be much better. South Carolina has a chance to beat Missouri on the road in a couple of weeks. But you're down there with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's the bottom of the division, and you just played them to the final minute. So that's not good. Being picked, you know, second to last in kickball in gym class, and the only person that got picked after you, you know, one of his feet is smaller than the other, or something like that. And it's like, oh, well, this is the company I keep. This guy gets picked last all the time, and he's the only one left before I get picked. That's not a good sign. It's kind of like South Carolina. You beat Vanderbilt by only one. Vanderbilt's the bottom of the barrel in the SEC. You just snuck past them. That's the company you're keeping right now. And that's concerning. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm all right. This is Jim from Kanehoy, which is right next door to Huge, South Carolina.
Ah.
Just thought I'd check in, and please don't cut me off. I got 2 points to make for you,
sure,
today.
Go ahead.
Number one, I think you might have a little eligibility left. You could wear your Connecticut shirt. You could have quarterbacked that team. Because Vanderbilt allowed them to go down the field rushing only 3. You could have done it. I could have done it. Even Super Dave could have done it. Because Super Dave almost picked Vanderbilt to win.
That's true. Something
could have been twisted around there, you know, whatever. But I'm saying Vanderbilt gave him the game. You don't play to lose. You were winning the game by rushing 5, sometimes more than 5. And all of a sudden you back off them. Zeb Nolan it's just ridiculous to what Vanderbilt did, but I'm happy for him. Because now Jimmy the Pollock's coming out of the closet. He's going to make a prediction. They're going to beat Missouri, and then the last game of the year, Clemson, they'll beat Clemson to take them to the bowl game in Birmingham. You heard it here.
Wow.
Now, my second thing is the Braves – I watched them because I love baseball. There's a problem here. They're playing over their heads. You don't give up that many walks. You don't overrun bases. You don't miss cue in the outfield. And you don't wear white pearls. That is ridiculous. And cut your hair like that. Please, I know why now the Cubs got rid of them. But the guy can hit home runs. So are we all going to get white pearls now? They show people in the stands with white pearls now. Have you ever worn white pearls? Well, I'm going to tell you, I haven't worn white pearls. I don't intend to, okay? But I'm thinking about buying Bobby Hart and white pearls for Christmas, okay?
All right.
If the Braves win, I'm going to bring them white pearls.
You have to. Yeah, that would be the thing for all Braves fans. It's like when the Angels won the World Series in 2002 and they had the rally monkeys, right? You just find something that becomes like the rallying cry and everybody latches onto it. I guess my grandmother was a Braves fan all those years. She used to wear my grandmother's white pearls, I'm sure. They're just telling you about their Braves fandom all this time. But hey, whatever it takes to you know, rally the team like that. Like the Red Sox this year have that shopping cart. When you hit a home run, you take a ride in the shopping cart. Baseball's a long season. Sometimes you need things like that, especially this time of year, to latch onto and bring the team together. But that's why I said earlier, along the lines of a team of destiny, if you will. Now, I don't think the Braves are going to win the World Series. I wouldn't put money on that today. I think if they go to the World Series, as mentioned earlier by a caller, they'll be the underdog. I would take either the Astros or the Red Sox over the Braves right now. Typically, I would take the Dodgers over the Braves, but the Braves are up 2-0, so they have a pretty good head start on L.A. and the way they've won these two games. But just exactly what Jim was saying. I mean, to be able to strike out 14 times, walk 0 times, and win. To then walk 9 guys, hit another last night, come back, and still win. These are things that are rarely done. I gave you all the numbers from Jason Stark last hour. Rarely ever done in baseball history, let alone a playoff game against a team that won over 100 games. Are they playing over their heads a little bit? Yeah, maybe, because you shouldn't win games like that, especially against the Dodgers. But now you're up 2-0. You got the confidence on your side. They're getting timely hitting and good pitching. Their starting rotation's been on a roll these last couple of months. The bullpen's been pitching well this postseason. Maybe it takes a break or two here just to get you going, and you don't turn back. We'll get to more on the Braves when we do come back and hear how some of the calls went last night for that game winner for Atlanta. We'll continue to talk about the Braves when we come back. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio on a little Motown Monday. What a cool song from Marvin Gaye. This is a great one. And we've talked in the past about the best songs written for like Hollywood movies, soundtracks, TV shows, just fake music, fake songs that were used specifically for movies or shows. And this would be up there as well, as he wrote this for the movie by the same name, right? Trouble Man? Wasn't it the movie itself? Great song from Marvin Gaye back in the day. On a Motown Monday here on the Morning Midday Show. Braves got a big win. You know, a lot of times you listen to that music when you're feeling down. If you're a Gamecock fan, maybe you're feeling down. If you're a Clemson fan, you won this weekend, but also maybe feeling down. Just got by against Syracuse. In fact, speaking of music, we got to hit ourselves with a little Cat Stevens here, because these football teams around here, the Citadel, coughed up another game against Furman. And I always think back to a great Cat Stevens song, wondering where all the good teams play, because they haven't been around here.
I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the good teams play?
You beat Vanderbilt by only one. You beat Syracuse because they miss a field goal. Cat Stevens wrote that song specifically about South Carolina all those years ago, wondering what happened to the good football teams around here. The Citadel shoot themselves in the foot against Furman. Unbelievable.
You're forgetting those guys in Conway.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's where the good teams
They have
play.
A big game coming up Wednesday, actually.
Yeah.
Taking on Appalachian State, and that's going to be in Boone. And, of course, App State might be a bit dangerous this week, coming off a sloppy loss to Louisiana last week.
That's right. It is a big game in the Fun Belt. I'm all for midweek college football, so looking forward to that. Yeah, Conway, that's where the good teams play. Or Atlanta, right? The Atlanta Braves up 2-0 on the Dodgers. More on the Braves in just a moment, but first, let's hear how it sounded last night. They get back-to-back walk-off winners. We always like to bring you different audio from around the globe for these big sports games. I always love to hear how it sounds in different languages or from different avenues, different teams, different broadcasts. How do they handle the big moment? The Braves walk it off last night. Here's how it sounded first on the Braves radio call as the Braves win game two.
Line drive. That is through. It gets through. Here comes Dansby. Lightning strikes twice, and the Braves walk it off. This is unbelievable. And the Braves win it, and they go up 2-0 in the series. Listen to this place. I can't believe it.
Yeah, as heard on our sister station, the Braves with that walk-off win. Now, the descriptor, not very good. Right? He just says line drive gets through. You have no idea where that ball goes or what happens. But I love the emotion of it. I love the emotion of that call, and the Braves take the 2-0 lead. You get the moment, right? When he said lightning strikes twice, right? He captured the moment of walking off back-to-back games and how big of a win it was for Atlanta. What about on the flip side? For the Dodgers, it's always tough. We played the audio earlier from Syracuse in their radio broadcast. It's always tough to be on the losing end, the wrong end of a dramatic moment like that. Here's Charlie Steiner on the Dodgers radio network last night.
Drills one off the glove of Trey Turner into center field, and the Braves will win it. Rosario scorched it. Trey Turner tried to make the backhand, deflected off the glove, and the Braves win 5-4.
Solid from Steiner. Now, he said Trey Turner, it was Corey Seager, but I believe in Steiner's defense, I believe he's still broadcasting remotely because Charlie Steiner, you may remember him from his time on SportsCenter, really funny guy. He's had some health issues, so I believe he's still not traveling with the Dodgers. So I believe he's doing that still from his basement. And, you know, it's hard to tell off of a TV monitor exactly who's who and when infielders are shifted and everything. But Steiner there at the call for the Dodgers, well done on the losing side. But, of course, a big game like this, it's carried throughout the world. So here was Japanese TV. Here's how that walk-off sounded for the Braves last night on Japanese TV.
Center, Ita, 届けました. Sayonara. 5-4, 2試合 連続 の sayonara 勝ち. Braves 2勝 0敗. 最後はグラブをかすめました.
That was on Japanese TV. He says sayonara twice. I have to tell myself, is sayonara, is that actually that's a Japanese word?
Yes, for goodbye.
Yeah, how about that?
It's gone. Right. Get out of here.
Well, I've always heard that phrase, right, sayonara, but I didn't know that was actually Japanese. So I just learned something new. He says it twice in that clip. And when I Google it, that's the first question that comes up. Is sayonara a Japanese word? And it says yes, but it's been used informally in the English language since the late 1800s. How about that? I've always heard that phrase. I never knew it was it's a Japanese term. So now I know at least one word of Japanese.
You never heard sayonara, sucker?
Yeah, but I just didn't know that it was a I didn't know what language it came from. I would not have guessed it was a Japanese word. I don't know what I would have guessed it was. But now I know. Now I know a word of Japanese. We're all getting smarter on this Monday. And lastly, here's how it sounded on Spanish TV. This was carried on CNN. In Spanish, CNN, I don't know what they call it, but the Spanish version of CNN, which is interesting to me that this is on CNN, but it was a big game last night. Here's how it sounded on Spanish TV.
El cerrador contra Jensen. Lanzamiento. Batazo ahí que se le va. Va a venir la jugada hacia el plato y otro walk-off. Otra oportunidad que dejan los Bravos de Atlanta. En el terreno de juego a los Dodgers de Los Ángeles, la hizo un grande Eddie Rosario con sencillo impulsador hacia el jardín central y los Bravos toman la ventaja en el campeonato de la Liga Nacional, 2-0.
Gigante.
Gigante. Now, I do know that word that he says at the very end. That means giant. And I know that because, in part, the San Francisco Gigantes. So, giant. That was a giant play. Giant hit, of course, to win back-to-back, to win the first two, to go 2-0 up on the Dodgers. Now, I wondered earlier, you know, when's the last time you had back-to-back walk-offs like this? And I recall the 1991 World Series and what an incredible World Series it was. And growing up, we had certain things on VHS tapes. My father used to record, like, all the All-Star games. So when I was homesick or I had nothing to do and I was a little kid, I used to love to watch these old games. I go back and I pop in a VHS tape, and we had all these different All-Star games. He saved all – my father saved – my parents still may have them. I have no idea whatever happened to these VHS tapes. But we had all different games, old Red Sox games, Monday Night Football games on VHS tapes. And I used to love – if you listen to the show, you know I love nostalgia. So even as a kid, if there was nothing on TV, if I was homesick, I'd pop in an old VHS tape. I'd watch an old game. And we used to have these old All-Star games. And we had the 91 World Series as well was recorded. So I used to – as a kid, I used to watch that all the time. The 91 World Series. And what a great World Series it was with those classic games. But, yes, that was a series in which you had back-to-back walk-offs, first for the Braves. That's the last time they've done it. And then the Twins came back with back-to-back walk-offs in 6 and 7, which is just crazy. And, of course, Game 7, 1-0, goes to 10 innings. It's one of the best World Series games at the end of one of the best World Series, and the Twins beat the Braves. And we heard from Jerry last hour, a Braves fan who called and was talking about that, and we were up against the hour. Didn't mean to cut you off at the time, by the way, Jerry. We just had to take it hard out. Our breaks are hard-timed at the end of each hour. But he jogged my memory that I should know at least another example that has happened since then of back-to-back walk-off winners. He referenced Jack Buck, which is a good poll, about how Jack Buck says, you know, we'll see you, whatever it was, later tonight, because it wasn't at past midnight, or we'll see you tomorrow, whatever that line was. But Joe Buck then brought that back and used that in 2004 when the Red Sox had back-to-back walk-offs against the Yankees in the 2004 CS, both times from David Ortiz. One time that blooper to center field and then the home run into the bullpen. And so that's the last time I can recall that it happened for a team to walk off in back-to-back playoff games. The Red Sox with Ortiz in 2004, and Joe Buck used that same sign-off or same signature call that his father used for the 91 World Series when it also occurred. I'm not sure if it's happened since 2004, but you win back-to-back games and do it in that fashion. It's hard not to come away from this thinking like, wait a minute, hold on. Right? There's something special about this team. They got the pearls. They got the momentum. They're playing good baseball right now. They bring in these guys at the trade deadline. They're having success. This seems like a team that's, you know, well bonded around one another. They like one another. Good team chemistry. Snicker doing a good job. Bullpen's pitching well. The starting rotation's gotten going here the second half of the year and into the playoffs. Brad on Twitter said, calm down with all the Braves hype. Destiny, how about one game at a time? We need to get one win in L.A. But it feels damn good to do that to the Dodgers in the first two games. Absolutely. Especially to do it to the Dodgers, the team that knocked you out and came back last year. But it's the same reason why you should also be cautious. Because you were in the same spot a year ago. Granted, you know, not with home field advantage. The pandemic, you're playing neutral site. You didn't have the fans. A little bit different now. You're at home, then you go on the road. You come back home. You know, that helps to have that home field advantage and how wild it was the last two games. Certainly 8 walk-offs. But yes, just like you want the revenge against the Dodgers, it should also allow you to remember what happened last year against the Dodgers and why you can't put the cart in front of the horse right now because you're up 2-0. But you got the job done. Go win one in L.A. Even if you lose all three, that's worst-case scenario. But guess what? You're coming back home. You at least get to return to – you have guaranteed you're heading back to Atlanta at some point in the series. Well, unless you go win a couple in L.A. and end it there. But at minimum, you're heading back to Atlanta needing to win some games at the end of the series.
Now, Tony called and said that during a Spanish broadcast,
yes,
you notice that they use the term walk-off in English.
Oh, I did not catch that.
Oh, you didn't catch that?
No, I
didn't.
Yeah,
I caught that as well.
Interesting.
Now, of course, they're probably using it because there's probably, I guess it doesn't, sometimes it doesn't literally translate. They'll just use
right.
the English word or phrase.
Yes.
Well, and because English has more words and phrases than any other language.
Yes.
Which is why you have to learn it if you're going to work in the airline industry, especially if you're air traffic controller or a pilot. Even if you're going to work a small, dinky airport in Tibet, you have to know English.
Yeah, it's such a tough language. You have words that are spelled the same way but then have different meanings in certain contexts, and it's, you know, such a difficult language. But, yeah, there are certain terms that are just English terms that have no translation. I guess walk-off is considered one of those where that's just a term. Baseball has a lot of these. And I worked in minor league baseball, and so, of course, there's a lot of Spanish-speaking players, but there are certain terms that they do understand or that they use as well when growing up in the Dominican Republic or in Puerto Rico or Mexico, wherever it is, if they're speaking Spanish. But there are certain baseball terms that they say in English because there's just no translation. It's what it is. It's like a proper name almost, where you just, like companies, right? You don't translate the name of a company. That's just their name. Even if it's an English word, it's the name of the company. You just say what it is. You don't translate it into Spanish. There are certain terms like that as well. And walk-off, I guess, is one of those. That walk-off, they just don't translate it. That's what it's called. It's an English word. There's no translation for it. They also refer to it as a walk-off. I Googled this just because I was curious. I know very little Spanish. I took Spanish for 5 years. I have dealt with a lot of Spanish speakers in my career, and I wish often that I knew the language a lot better. I know certain words and phrases. I can understand some of it. I can't really put sentences together. So I Googled, what would be walk-off? How would that translate? And the Google translator tells me Bajar, which just means, doesn't that mean like small or low? Like the Baja men, that group that's saying, who let the dogs out? I always thought Baja was just like under or low or to go under. But that's what this translator tells me for walk-off. I don't think that translation works very well. But yeah, I guess that's one of those terms that does not translate. The Spanish broadcast calls are always the most exciting. And that one was a good one as well. Braves up 2-0, heading to L.A. We'll see if they can keep it rolling. Would be no better team than the Dodgers to knock them out here in the NLCS. Coming up, Ed Orgeron out at LSU. Unfortunately for Ed O, at this point, it was only a matter of time. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Truckin', got my chips cashed in. Keep truckin', like the doo-dah man. Together, more or less in line. Just keep truckin' home, home, home.
Arrows of neon and flashing my keys out on... Ed-O, out at LSU. It was only a matter of time. We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you're missing anything from the show, catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. As we've been discussing the Braves throughout the afternoon, taking that 2-0 lead on the Dodgers. I just saw this online, this guy going, taking things personally. Pat Forty wrote an article, actually not even an article, it's just a tweet, about Tennessee and what happened Saturday night at the end of that game at Ole Miss. And he said it's an embarrassing display, pitiful display by the petulant fan base of Tennessee. Embarrassing night for them, yada, yada, yada. Brian Rice, who's on the radio in Tennessee, responded, and he was very upset. And he said, almost as embarrassing as someone who claims to be a professional journalist saying that 100 people are fully representative of the other 102,000 fans. Pitiful display by a sports writer who was once respected. He continues, a second tweet, says, maybe I should let this go. But I'm pretty sick and tired of people who claim to be professionals like you taking pot shots at a fan base that's been through a lot. You should be embarrassed. And then another tweet that says, you are banned from our radio station in Knoxville, and I will literally fight anybody on our staff who tries to have you on. Someone's a little touchy. That's a hard hill to die on, to defend the Tennessee fan base after what happened Saturday night. To go so far as to... threatened to fight anybody that would have Pat Forty on as a guest on their radio station. A bit much. Remember, Tennessee, of course, had the whole... the way they responded when Lane Kiffin got fired, or I shouldn't say when he got fired, when he left for a job, the way they responded and essentially rioted and tore down that campus, the way they responded when Greg Schiano was supposed to be hired and went out of their way to make sure that he lost that job before he ever even started, and then Saturday night as well. There's a couple of examples, and all fan bases have problems, have bad things you could point to and have bad fans in them. But in the past 12 years, there's a couple of bad things on the resume of the Tennessee fan base and how they've reacted in certain situations, and Saturday night was another one. That was ugly. It was embarrassing. It was disgrace. They should have ended that game at that point. Tennessee loses. Go home. I also like other ideas. People have said Tennessee next week or their next home game, you play without any fans, just parents and family and friends. That's it. I like that idea as well. There should be some sort of punishment. I mean, that was ridiculous. Like a 20-minute delay because people are throwing things on the field. Grow up. Ed Orgeron lost his job this weekend with LSU. He'll continue to coach the rest of this season, but he won't return next year. We'll hear from Ed O in just a moment. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's first go to the phones. Ricardo is with us. Ricardo, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you doing, Moore?
Good.
Real quick before you cut me off, Les Miles was a great coach, obviously. He ran into some problems with the students, we know about that when he went to Kansas. But Ed, he kind of wears on you. I guess when he was at USC, they let him go after interim. Then he went to Mississippi and, bounced around a little bit. But, Joe Brady was the offensive coordinator. Right now he's with the Panthers. But it appears that, when he had good offensive coordinators and a chance generational quarterback like Joe Burrow, he did good. And right now, I think they've already picked the coach in waiting. They're just waiting for the season over to hire him.
Oh, you think it'll be Joe Brady?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Yes, I think it's if I was a betting man, I think it's Joe Brady.
Well, he certainly did. As you said, the job he did with LSU would make him a candidate. Appreciate it, Ricardo. My one thing for Brady would be, I wouldn't leave the NFL if I'm Joe Brady. I don't think he's a I know he went to college there to get that job, but he came up with the Saints. That was his first chance to be an offensive coordinator, to go down the road to LSU. And then his first opportunity, he jumps to the NFL. And I know it'd be a head coach with LSU. But he has said, he's on record before saying he doesn't like the recruiting aspect of college football. So I don't think everyone's going to say Brady, and rightfully so. And if I'm LSU, I'm certainly reaching out to him. I just don't know if Joe Brady himself would be interested. I see him more as an NFL coach than a college coach. That was the only year he had spent, you know, he was in the NFL, went down to college, had such a great season that he bounced right back to the NFL as an offensive coordinator. But it's the obvious, you can draw the obvious, you know, the connection there. And LSU should be interested. For Ed O specifically, not only wearing him, you know, the whole selling point about Ed O was that he was a different man with LSU. We had stories about him breaking, like, projectors at Ole Miss, right? He had such a temper and everything. He'd be a fiery coach and drinking energy drinks all the time. And, you know, he'd be, like, essentially punching holes in walls to try to fire up his guys or coaches or everything. And he really bombed at Ole Miss. And the idea was that, you know, if he got another chance, he'd learn from those mistakes. And that's what he was doing at LSU. And he was this different guy. And he was more about the culture and more loving. And you wanted to go play for him instead of being, like, scared of him. Right? But a lot of good articles were written the last couple of days about how he lost his way at LSU. And I've said this about Doug Peters. I've said this a lot about a lot of people. You get that success, you can't help but allow it to affect your ego. You kick your feet up a little bit. I don't know if that's what happened at Ed O, but we've had stories of, and who knows if they're true or not. I always hate how the stories come out after the fact. They announced yesterday they're moving on from it at the end of the year. Oh, look at all these stories about what's been going on lately. How come this wasn't reported before? Right? It always comes off as piling on. Now that he's gone, you're going to kick him while he's down. So we got these stories yesterday about him having his various girlfriends at practice who are a distraction, and their kids would take part in the drills, you know, like he's doing a favor for his girlfriend and her kid. Like, oh, yeah, come out and, you know, run some routes with us, LSU on the football field, stuff like that. You win a national championship, right? He hired his coaches last year, his coordinators, without ever actually meeting with them. You get a little comfortable, a little cocky. Like, hey, we just won the national championship. We went 15-0. You start to feel yourself a little bit. You bring the girlfriend around at practice. You're not as focused. You have the kid taking up time at practice instead of your players doing the drills. Some good stories have come out, if they're all true. And they don't make Ed O look great. You know, him hitting on a woman at the gas station who ends up being married to somebody very high up in LSU. And that doesn't reflect well. And just different stories like that. Take him with a little bit of a grain of salt, because it's easy to kick a guy down, you know, while he's down and on his way out, instead of reporting these things the last couple of months. But there's all sorts of stuff going on with this program and Ed O with around the program and away from the program. When it comes to the actual football team, as I've been saying, he's not an offensive or a defensive coordinator. He's just the head coach. The coordinators haven't been good enough lately. The team hasn't been good enough. Who do you blame when you underachieve? It's the head coach. And if he was the defensive coordinator, if he was calling the plays on defense and you had a great defense, that could be his saving grace, but he really doesn't bring much to the table. So if you're not winning, what's the saving grace for Ed O? He hasn't hired good coordinators. He doesn't run the offense or defense. He recruits well, but LSU, you should always recruit well. You know, what does he offer? What does he bring to the table? They went 15-0 in 2019. Then you lose Joe Burrow and Joe Brady. That's hard to replace. Gene Chizik won the national championship with Cam Newton. Hard guy to replace. You lose a Heisman quarterback. Hard to replace. 2 years later, Chizik was out. Auburn got worse each in the next two seasons. 2 years later, Ed Ogeron's going to be out. LSU has gotten worse each in the next two seasons. And I remember last year I was filling in on Fan Talk with Bobby as the producer, and I was talking about that at the time, that he's on the Gene Chizik route. Now, you could see it. LSU just lost too much talent in 2019. That was kind of a flash in the pan, not to take anything away from them. They had a great season, but that's just hard to duplicate. And Ed O has kind of been exposed since that he isn't some sort of legendary coach, one of the best coaches in college football. He had a great coaching staff. He had a great staff. Did a good job bringing it all together, and then maybe got a little too comfortable after winning, you know, bringing the girlfriend around and hitting on different women and the photos of this and that of his personal life. His personal life is his personal life. I don't care. It's just the point that, you know, you win a national championship, maybe you're not grinding as much. It's like the expression in boxing. It's hard to get up and train at 5 a.m. when you're sleeping in silk sheets or whatever this expression is. Right, when you start to win some fights and you're making millions of dollars, you may not be training as hard as a fighter anymore, like when you were trying to come up and make a name for yourself. Now you're a millionaire in a fancy home with a pool out back and 10 bedrooms, and it's like, well, why do I still have to get up so early and go to the gym for hours? And you relax a little bit. I think there's some of that as well with LSU. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go back to the phones. Rob is with us. Rob, what's going on? How are you?
All right. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
I think to kind of go along with what you're saying, I agree. Success is, in my opinion, much harder to deal with than failure for a lot of these guys, especially in sports. Dealing with failure is what put them where they are. I mean, overcoming adversity, making all these strides, you know, in their personal life, you know, whether it be athletically, academically. When you finally make it, you've never really made it before. I think it's real easy to fall into a sense of complacency, I guess you'd say. And to the previous caller, Ed Orgeron, or Les Miles, I think he was the head coach when they were embezzling, you know, money from that children's cancer hospital to pay for recruits. So I wouldn't get carried away, you know, singing Les Miles' praise. It's kind of a LSU, you know, there are a couple other Division I programs, but that is a one show town. It's all LSU there. It's kind of like Georgia. You know, you got Georgia Tech, but, you know, 9 out of 10 people you run into are Georgia fans. So it's kind of, you know, sort of like an echo chamber, and that's all that really matters. So they can kind of tune out a lot of, you know, a lot of outside stuff, and they don't care as long as they're winning. But, you know, you stop winning and, you know, and starting to threaten to kill people and, you know, bury them in the bayou and, you know, he trying to hit on boosters' wives. I mean, you got problems. You're going into Steve Sarkisian in Southern Cal territory there.
Yeah, Ed, oh, yeah, there's all sorts of stories about away from the football field. It's a blessing and a curse when you have that program like that. If you're USC, the head coach, even at USC, you can hide a little bit. You got the Dodgers, the Lakers, the Rams now, the Chargers. You got all these different teams, all these different distractions. When you're LSU, that's all there is around there. And now it's great when you're winning and you have all the necessary, everything that you need, all the resources. But when you're losing, then then you could be in a bad spot because it's all on you. You can't hide. You're the biggest show in town. And I agree with what Rob said. For certain people, everyone's different. But failure can motivate you. Success can. There are plenty of one-hit wonders. There's a reason why there's very few bands like the Rolling Stones or Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or whoever. Pick your favorite band. And the Beatles and Led Zeppelin weren't around the longest. You know, the Rolling Stones have been doing it for years. It's easy to get there. It's so hard to stay at the top. It's harder to stay at the top of the mountain than to actually climb up there. And a lot of people find that out. Ed Orgeron, the latest. Had great success, but it's hard to then duplicate it afterwards. All right. We got another break, right, Joe? Do we have another break here?
Yeah.
All right. We'll come back.
Yes, we do.
All right. We'll wrap up hour two. We'll try to do that audio if we can squeeze it in when we come back from Ed O. They held a really awkward press conference yesterday to announce all this. But, hey, yeah, he's going to coach the rest of the season, but then he's going to be done. We'll try to hear from him when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Ed Orgeron out at LSU, at least in a few weeks. We'll hear from him in a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio as we wrap up Hour 2. Coming up, we'll get to all of my takeaways from Week 6 of the NFL season at the top of next hour, about 10 minutes from now. LSU announced Ed O. They mutually parted ways, which, you know, they did that in Seinfeld when Jerry had the first ever mutual breakup in dating history, as he said, and nobody believed him. It's never mutual. You know, Ed Orgeron didn't just, oh, okay, sure, yeah, I'm out of here. No, he didn't want to leave. He doesn't want to pass up that job. So they had to have this press conference yesterday, and of course the AD should talk at it, but since it was this quote-unquote mutual parting of ways, that's how or why they would have Ed Orgeron there as well. That's got to be a weird situation. Talk about how you're essentially going to be fired in a couple of weeks. You're going to hold this job for the rest of the season, then they're going to get rid of you. Well, here was Ed Orgeron yesterday at said press conference talking about this whole situation.
In 2019, what a magical run. But you know why? Because of the players. We had great players, and we had great coaches here. And the players make this program, and you're able to recruit great players here at LSU. But I knew we had to sustain that momentum, and we had to sustain that standard. And I know that the last 2 years hasn't been the standard of LSU. So when he came and talked to me after the Kentucky game, I knew that it was time. And I understand that. I understand the expectations of LSU. And I invited myself, and we did not meet him the last 2 years. I'm honored that I got to be the head coach at LSU. This administration has treated me with class, with dignity. The whole time that I've been here, they've given me everything that we needed to have success. I met with the players today. It's the first time that I get to talk to the players before I wanted to talk to you. But I am happy that I can be the coach of the LSU Tigers towards the end of the season. And I promise you this, we're not going to blink. I'm glad we beat Florida. Tomorrow's going to be Tell the Truth Monday, and we're going to be on to Ole Miss. And I'm going to take it one day at a time. But I'm always going to appreciate my time here. I have no regrets. Not one day. I was not going to have a bad day. I'm not going to blink. I told you guys that. You know, the circumstances that we haven't won enough games in the last 2 years, I totally get it. I want to take a little time off. You know, I'm 60 years old. I've coached for 37 years. I think I'm going to have enough money to buy me a hamburger. And every once in a while, maybe a double meat cheeseburger, a Sonic. But I want to take a little time off to find out what direction I want to be in. You asked me if I think today I'm not going to coach, but that might be different a month from now. But right now, I want to take a little time off, spend with my kids.
Ed Orgeron yesterday saying he'll take some time off as well. Why not? He's going to get $17 million to go away from LSU. He doesn't have to work another day the rest of his life. 60-year-old getting a check for $17 million at the end of the year. Has that national championship as coach, as he said, for almost 40 years. And LSU will have a coaching change. People will point to Jimbo Fisher, and I understand why. He worked at LSU under Nick Saban. And also, the AD there, you know, has hired him before. But as I understand it, that buyout, Texas A&M, or I should say LSU, would have to pay that buyout unless there's some sort of loophole, and that buyout's almost $100 million. Unless I'm missing something, some sort of loophole or way around it, I don't see how you could ever go after Jimbo with that buyout. But maybe there's something in that contract about if he goes to another job, the buyout isn't quite the same. That's only if he gets fired. I don't know. But if I'm LSU, I'm certainly reaching out to Mel Tucker, head coach at Michigan State, coach of the year in college football, the great job he's done there, seeing if he'd be interested. Huge job in college football becoming available at the end of the season. It'll be interesting to see who they hire next. Hour 3 coming up. My week 6 NFL takeaways next.